Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman. We'll get to the show in a minute. Eric and I breaking down Florida's win at Georgia. Gators sweep Blanco 2-0 against Georgia. 10 straight wins over the Dogs. Also preview Florida and Alabama. But I did want to add one post-recording note that shortly after we recorded, the AP Men's Top 25 came out at about 1 o'clock. And Florida was ranked for the first time since 2021. The Gators coming in at 24th in the AP poll. So they will play a game as a ranked team for the first time in 3 years on Wednesday night when they visit the Crimson Tide, who are also, of course, ranked in the top 25. So a ranked matchup coming up. Hope you guys enjoy the show. Florida Basketball Hour podcast is brought to you by the Gatorverse, an exclusive community dedicated to connecting University of Florida fans and student-athletes. Members receive access to exclusive autograph collectibles, real-life experiences, giveaways, VIP events, rewards, and athletes receive a majority of revenue from sales of their collectibles. That's the way that NIL is supposed to work. To find out more about becoming a Gatorverse member and Locker Mania, visit Gatorverse.io. That's Gatorverse.io. Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, Eric Fawcett, GatorCountry.com, and I are going to break down Florida's 88-82 win over the Dogs in Athens. Obviously, the Gators sweep Georgia after winning the first game in Gainesville in overtime. So Florida gets the season sweep. They improve to 18-7 on the year. And we are recording on Monday morning before the AP poll comes out. So no word yet on whether the Gators have received a national ranking, but certainly it seems possible or within the realm of possibility that Florida will get a spot in the AP top 25. I can't be sure about that, but we will see if that's the case, probably while we record, which I think is great. Obviously that was one thing that a lot of our listeners in our Patreon group, especially, really wanted to know, like, hey, is this a year where Florida gets back into the AP poll? It feels like it's been a while, and certainly it's been a while since Florida had an AP ranking in the month of February. That is going to be interesting. The poll will drop at noon, so it should drop towards the time that we record. I saw Kevin Brockaway mentioned that he had Florida in his top 25, so, you know, could be interesting, even if Florida's only there briefly. If it's a brief cameo and then the Gators go and get beat by Alabama pretty handily, that could be, you know, enough for the Gators to get in and out. But it would be exciting, certainly, and it hasn't happened in a while. So just kind of mentioning that, I think, is worth it at the top of the show. Also want to thank a couple new Patreons. John Sigel has become a member of the Game Day Gators. Monty became a member of the Six Man Club. Jason McClare joined as a free member. We'd love for you to become a Patreon, Jason, but we're glad you're paying attention. And Brian Smith has gone from Game Day Gator to Six Man Club, which is our top group. So I really appreciate all the people who have joined our Patreon to date. It is really, really cool to have new Patreons and a surge in membership over the last few weeks, which I guess makes sense when you've won 7 of 8, Eric.
Yeah, I was actually just thinking yesterday about some Patreon content for the NCAA tournament, which is something we have not talked about on this podcast for a very long time. Certainly we have never had the opportunity to do Patreon content for the NCAA tournament. So I was just thinking about yesterday how, there's still plenty of season left, or maybe not plenty of regular season left, but a good chunk of regular season left. But it looks like the Gators will be playing in the Big Dance. So I think that it's going to be a good opportunity to go a little bit more in depth, a little bit with some of the film, doing some scouting there, and hopefully the Gators are playing multiple games and we can do a bunch. So I do think that yeah, like whatever the kind of flow we've been having currently of Patreon content, I think is going to go up even more when it comes to March. So yeah, this would be a good time to go and join. And as always as well, I've done a couple of videos based on what some of our subscribers have asked for. So if there's anything also that you're looking for, whether it's down the stretch here or as the Gators hopefully enter the NCAA tournament with a good seat, you are welcome to ask, and potentially that can be accommodated. So yeah, so welcome to our new Patreon subscribers, and it is good to have you.
Yeah, definitely. And we get to talk about a sweep over Georgia today, a tale of two halves. And I thought Florida in the second half was interested on defense, which they were not in the first half in any way. And because, again, I don't think there's really anything schematically Mike White is doing that's creating a ton of stress on Florida. I just thought Florida was not interested in guarding straight line drives in the first half. Seem much more interested in that in the second half. And then I thought Florida's offense in the second half was better. Even a couple nice little set plays. I think one, they got Will Richard a three. Another, Zion Pullen used to get into the lane late, made a great decision. The way the game was being officiated to run a set play for Zion to attack the basket. You know, so I think a little bit better on offense in terms of like what they're actually executing. And then better defense in the second half. And that's kind of how you get a tale of two halves victory. And Florida's longest stretch of the season holding another team without a basket as the Gators held Georgia 9 minutes and 37 seconds without a field goal.
Yeah, safe to say if people were betting on that before the season, I think Georgia would have been a lot of people's
selections
for that one. But yeah, it's honestly like, I know some people are going to be like, no, it's not sad at all. We love to see this from Georgia, a big rival, but it's like, it's honestly almost sad to see. Like, this is every single game for Georgia. They get out to a first half lead. It doesn't matter if it's Florida, if it's LSU, if it's Alabama, they get out to a double digit lead in the first half and then they just melt. And it's almost always because their offense just goes so cold. And I do think there was an element in the first half where I thought it was pretty clear that Georgia had had a plan of how to attack the Gators, and it started with Russell Chiwa. And again, if you don't watch Georgia, like Russell Chiwa is like the fourth or fifth option offensively. You right. would not know that with how they used him against Florida, because they went and ran a bunch of plays for him. And yeah, like, I'm sorry, but like Micah Handlock didn't, like, there was some, like it's one thing to just get physically overpowered. I mean, Russell Chiwa at 300 pounds was blowing by him on the dribble. And there was one, like, I'll say fairly lazy foul where Russell Chiwa at the not a fast rip through and Micah Handlock just fouled him just out of like, oh, well, I guess I'm not guarding this guy. So he just grabbed him. And I just was like 15 feet through. Yeah, I really just would hope for something a little bit better from Handlocked in there. Like, if he gets sealed and finished over the top of, that's one thing. But like, here's a 300 pounder who's dribbling around like a Handlocked in at ease. Like, it's just one of those things that you're like, okay, if you're not going to be able to guard a guy on the perimeter or inside, like, yep. Like what's going on here? So, so anyways, it was a good plan by Georgia to go to Chiwa early so much. It worked better than it should have, but it's still it's a good way to attack the Gators. We know that they don't have a lot of bulk on the inside. The Gators did do well to double Chiwa, and it's one of those things that, like, generally Florida doesn't like to double team the post. And that's something that I personally am not a big fan of, doubling the post generally speaking, but like Chiwa was just kicking it around. So those doubles were really good. Well, it's cup general. A couple of them were not so good, but Chiwa just not a particularly skilled passer out of the post. Like I mentioned, this is a guy who's never been the first, second, or third, or even fourth offensive option ever in his career, even at South Florida. So yeah, not someone who's faced a lot of playmaking situations out of double teams. So good adjustment there from Florida instead of just letting him overpower whoever the Gators have at center. So I did think that was a good start for Georgia. But then at the same time, I thought Noah Thomason was just hitting some outrageous shots, which he can do. But it's one of those things that it wasn't like, wow, they're really picking the Gators apart with their offense. They came out with a lot of good energy. I did think they ran some good stuff and had a great plan to get Chiwa involved, but it wasn't like their overall offensive attack was like, oh man, what are the Gators going to do here? So you just like, and again, I said it on the podcast, like you knew this was going to happen. This was the exact script we said on the podcast was going to happen, that Georgia was going to jump out to a lead, that we were going to wish the Gators were going to use timeouts, but they weren't. And then Georgia was going to go ice cold in the second half. It's every game for Georgia. I know a lot of people are not going to feel bad for them. It's like sad to watch that happens. The Gators did, I would say, were fairly consistent. You mentioned that the Gators came out in the second half and ran a couple set plays. Really liked to see that. That worked out for threes for Walter Clayton and Will Richard. Very nice sequencing there to come out with two variations out of the same look. I really like that. So, and it ended up being relatively close, but you would have liked that to be a little bit more of a comfortable win for the Gators, I would imagine. But at the same time, like, hey, they did hit a bunch of very tough shots in the first half. I didn't like, there was a lot of shots that were made that I wasn't like, wow, this was poor defense by the Gators. But at the same time, there was a lot of straight line drives as well. So it's one of those things where like the Gators were giving up a bunch of straight line drives. They're letting Russell Chiwa, who's maybe never scored off a drive in his life until playing the Gators. And it just was like extra backbreaking when Noah Thomason hits a leaner from 30 feet. But then again, you just kind of knew that like, well, if the Gators, want to crank up the intensity a little bit, they'll be able to slow things down. So it was took a little bit of the scenic route to get there, but the Gators got a win they really needed.
Yeah, I mean, some of those Thomason shots were actually pretty outrageous. You know, like they would run like, they would have the one like vintage Mike White cut with a guard like through the paint, and then they'd like set a stagger screen that wasn't like that good a screen, and like Florida would have somebody on him and he would just make it. That happened, I think, at least two of his first half threes were pretty well contested. I mean, look, I thought the one wrinkle that was nice, and I know this was Eric Pastrana scout, and you know, I figured he would at least certainly attack Florida's strengths. And I thought Georgia for the first time all year came out with two bigs in their starting lineup. Jalen Deloach played 90 seconds against Florida in the first game. He's a starter against the Gators in the second game. And it really mattered in terms of opening things up for straight line drivers. I thought they did a nice job sealing. This was another problem for Micah Hanlocked and like Florida. He really struggled with help early in the game too. And so, you know, his presence as a rim protector, which had improved recently, was exploited quite frequently, I will say, by Georgia. In addition to Russell Chiwa blowing by him, I have two outrageous stats for you, Eric, since we are getting into some fun things. One, Hanlocked and gave up a staggering 1.6 points per possession on post-ups in this game. Which basically means that at some point Chiwa missed a shot. That's what that tells me. Maybe he missed two and it was like, what? Like, well, no, I'm trying to think of how the number would have worked out. Anyway, I could go back possession by possession. I did not do that. Georgia has posted Chiwa up 82 times this season and he's averaged 0.88 per possession. That includes the Florida game now. And in the Florida game, again, 1.6 against Hanlocked and alone in that matchup. So that's one fairly outrageous stat, I guess. I said I had two. I can't remember what I was going to go to on the other. I just wanted to kind of point out that. Yes, I do. I do remember. This was an interesting game because it like also was an example of why like plus minus isn't always the best. Because like Micah Hanlockton was +8, which was third best on Florida. And like he was a liability that didn't get to play much in the second half, but was on the floor for Florida's run. Tommy Houck was +10. And so like I guess my point is like box plus minus can giveth and taketh away, Eric.
Yeah. So more advanced numbers. And again, I'm not trying to just, you know, kick dirt on Micah Hanlockton. He's been a good player for the game of the season, but like
much improved.
He has by a large margin the softest minutes on the Gators. Because when you think about most of his games, like, and again, this is me extrapolating a little bit and making generalizations, but like he starts the first half playing with the best players on the Gators. He then starts the second half playing with the best Gators, and he usually doesn't close games. So he's just like, whenever he's on the floor, he's almost always out there with Zion Pullen and Walter Clayton, and Will Richard and Tyrese Samuel. Like he just, so like when you look at the quality of teammate, like he's like, not to say these are bad players, but he hardly plays with Thomas Hauck. He's almost always out there with Tyrese Samuel. And if he's out there again, he's with Alex Condon, which is, you know, generally speaking, I would say that, you know, people would say that Condon has been a little bit stronger of a player than Hauck, not to say anything bad about Hauck. That's just Condon has probably been considered the better player. Micah Hanlockton has very few minutes with Riley Kugel, who again, Riley Kugel he gives and taketh away, but generally speaking, by the lineup data, he would be not one of Florida's best players. So that is just what, I don't say that to just be negative towards Hanlockton, just to point out what you're saying about plus minus, because it is a stat that we use. And again, some people find it very dubious and some people find it straight up bad. Like Ken Pomeroy, for example, hates lineup data. So if you want to, you know, and there's someone who's, you know, has a lot of pull in the analytics world, he hates lineup data. So so I just use that as a little bit of an example to say, like, that is one of the problems with just conventional lineup data, is it doesn't account for who a player is on the floor with and who they're on the floor against. So Hanlockton does have, when you look at the quality of competition that he's on the floor against, it's fairly high because it's the starters for the first half and second half, but he usually plays relatively low leverage minutes with the best players on Florida's team. That's just what I think of when I see numbers like that. I am still surprised because, of course, the Gators in the first half did not start particularly well.
Right.
Which was, you know, somewhat of his doing, but not all of his doing. But and then I think once again, like one of the stories of this game, and again, I'm not to totally change the subject, but like, who was it down the stretch? It was the two young bigs, and that we're starting to see that a little bit more, where it's like, who are the guys that are trusted? It's the two freshmen out there, which is certainly very interesting.
Yeah, no, it's super interesting. So like, there are times too in the NBA where, if you'll watch, you have kind of a lineup that can guard if you have a lead down the stretch, and you might ride those guys and you're like microwave that cooks and scores. Like you know, a casual fan might watch and be like, why is that guy got a towel on his shoulder? Like, he has 27 points, you know, and because this is get stops time. And increasingly Florida's like get stops time lineup is Alex Condon and Tommy Hauck. I mean, I know he had the 17 points, but I think to Eric's point, if you look at Tommy's minutes lately, you know, since the A&M game, it's 13 minutes, 14 minutes, 11 minutes, 26 minutes. So like, there was a trend where he was playing double digit minutes after never doing that after the Ole Miss game. And so the reason for that, even though he had 3 points, 2 points, and 2 points in the Auburn, A&M, and LSU game, was his ability to play defense as both a help defender and as somebody who, you know, is contributing physically in limiting straight run drives when he gets into a switch and stuff. We saw that happen a couple times late in the Georgia game, where it looked like, you know, there were a couple possessions. I'm sitting there at press level, and it looks like, hey, you know, they just got Justin Hill or Thomason on how he might be cooked. And he just moves his feet and sticks with them and bodies them up and forces either a tough shot or a pass. And so I think, you know, it's about defense with Tommy, and then with Condon, you know, the progress for me in this game was just the offensive decision-making. Like, we knew that he had skill offensively, but just to make high IQ reads, he made some passes at the top of the key on ball reversals that I thought were just really outstanding. Obviously, he hit a three, which is great. I don't need him to do that, but I do need the good decision-making. And, you know, And then we saw some of the skill level too, you know, faking Shiwa out of his shoes and basically getting a layup to give Florida a 7-point lead and a 5-point game was a pretty big moment in the second half.
Yeah, I remember on the previous podcast, I mentioned that like Thomas Houck was probably the most trusted stretch big on Florida's roster. And it was like, well, he hasn't it's pretty theoretical. Yeah. And again, I kind of admitted that I wasn't about to call that he was going to have a good shooting game, but certainly fit the narrative and what everyone was kind of waiting for. And the thing too is it seems like he, I don't want to say he was reluctant to shoot, but I feel like he could be shooting a lot more than he does. And I think he's just doesn't want to ruffle feathers. And as a young player to like get out there and like work hard defensively and not take a ton of shots has been a pretty good move for him. And we've seen the minutes rise, but at the same time, it's like, if he wants to completely differentiate himself, it starts with a performance like Georgia where and you just saw like Cotton ultimately hit a three. But before that in the game, there was a couple of times where Florida hit him at the top of the key and Georgia just backed up and put their heels on the charge circle and dared him to shoot. And he kind of had one of those like half pump fakes of like, oh, I guess I should take this if it's wide open. And then he didn't. And the moment you do that, like, okay, you're going to get guarded like that the rest of the game. So at least he did end up hitting a three. But I think that it just still like Florida's like, I don't know who you'd put as Florida's most trusted 3-point shooting front court player between Condon, who might be reluctant to take that shot, and Tyree Samuel, who is a little more willing to take that shot, but hasn't hit them. So yeah, just like on the Jake Winderman preview show, when I said that I thought Florida was going to be starting Thomas Houck at the end of the season, I thought that the shooting would be part of it. I also think too, just one of the issues with Florida and their defense that we've talked about is just the fact that they don't really have wings and they are this team of like guards and 7-footers. And you can just see that like, that's going to hurt you when it comes to straight line drives. I think Thomas Houck as a help defender, like stunting into the gaps, I think he's as could be the best on the Gators. It was just that maybe I need to watch a little bit more, but it's just something that's jumped out the last two games where just like his foot speed and length, and just like flexibility, he just gets like so low when he's stunting, which just like gives him even extra length. And I feel like he's disruptive. And for a team that is struggling to guard straight line drives, you need guys like that that can help in the gaps. And I think he was very good there. So I still think like Thomas Houck had one of the several really, really bad breakdowns in baseline out of bounds defense. Where the Gators gave up two wide open layups and a wide open three, where they did not guard well on any single one of those. One of them was Thomas Houck. So, you know, there's still moments like that as a freshman, but when it comes to like, especially playing a team like Alabama coming up, where it's going to be a lot of them trying to create gaps and dribble drive, you need guys that can close space one pass away and try to help. And Thomas Houck is just like by far and away the most equipped to do that in the front court. So you mentioned his minutes continuing to tick up. I think that that's going to just continue to be the case, both because of how he played and also just the matchups that are ahead.
So Eric, I'm now at 5 coaching staffs, five. Well, I shouldn't say staffs. I haven't talked to every single coach on those staffs. I'm now at 5 SEC coaches that have, said to me that, hey man, we looked at Zion in the portal and we knew he was good, but man, we didn't know he was going to be the best point guard in the Southeastern Conference. And you know, I mentioned that Florida ran, you know, an action for him to get him into the paint, and the way the game was called, he of course got fouled and buried his free throws, but just another spectacular basketball game from Zion Pullen. I thought he played great defense in the second half as well, in addition to like the fact that he had 16 points, 7 rebounds and 5 assists and no turnovers in an electric environment on the road. I mean, the story just keeps getting better for ZP.
Yeah. Like I've always said that assist to turnover ratio is an overrated stat, and I will maintain that. But then at the same time, like when you see one that's just like as good as Zion Pullins, it's like, yeah, that is one of the indications of like just how good he is. So for him to, like you said, just seems like he's like constantly four or five assists and like zero turnovers. And again, it's like he's someone who you kind of feel like plays a little bit of a pass first role. He kind of goes in waves between being a pass first guy and a guy that's like looking to get to his pull up, but like spends time as a pass first guy. And you just still see, like, it doesn't matter if he's out there hunting a shot or if he's looking to distribute first, it's like, oh, and he has like somewhere between 10 and 16 points. Like, it's just like miraculous. He looks like an NBA player out there, just like physically, like just to see in any matchup. And again, this was another one of them. You just look at, and it just looks like the Gators have a grown ass man at point guard and other teams don't. And so I think even just like physically, that ability to get in the paint, like he's so strong. So he just like stays on balance as he's putting together dribbles to get into his pull up. He's someone who gained a bunch of weight and strength this year without losing his jump shot, which has not been the case for previous Gators in the previous staff. So I would love to hear, you know, Coach Lopez talk about that, because it's just, as soon as I saw how Pullen looked, I was like, oh, I wonder if he's going to be able to shoot, or I wonder if he's going to be able to defend and move his feet. And it just seems like he's like so well put together physically while still being the same kind of skilled offensive playmaker that he was at UC Riverside. So yeah, I just feel like this, like things really couldn't have gone much better for Pullen in terms of like this is a dream outcome for getting a grad transfer point guard in the transfer portal. And yeah, it's just one of those things that like, hey, if you've got the best backcourt in a game or the best just point guard, which I would agree with, I don't think I would take any other point guard in the SEC over Pullen. That's gonna win you a lot of games, and we're seeing that where the Gators don't play their best basketball and are continuing to win games, and then you just hope that like with having guards like that give you some kind of a ceiling in March.
Yeah, Florida also had 14 points off turnovers in the second half, creating some live ball turnovers, which Zion Pullen had a hand in three of those. So like just doing everything to help contribute to Florida winning. The Gators aren't a team that generates a ton of live ball turnovers, even though they're good in transition. It's kind of a little bit of a mystery in that, not a mystery, but certainly that's a interesting dichotomy, you know, because they are a good transition team, but they don't really feast on live ball turnovers or create a lot of them defensively. So getting those opportunities, being able to exploit them, very helpful on Saturday of the win, and Zion Pullen at the center of that. Matt Colbert, another six-man club member, and Perry Shukla wanted to shout them out today. It's their turn to get a Patreon shout-out, so we appreciate that. I know Perry has hit up Eric with various requests and stuff in the past. So, you know, the cool thing about being a Patreon is, like, if you ask us to do something, like take a look at the women's team or do an hour-long show recapping the SEC, like, we're probably going to do it.
I think that was Perry, actually, who wanted a breakdown of the women's team. So, and I'm glad he asked for that.
Yeah, no. So that kind of stuff is super fun and you know, enjoyable to do. Florida now takes its victory. It improves to 8-4 in the SEC. The Gators, you know, may end up really, really regretting the 1-point loss and the 13-point lead that they blew at Texas A&M at this point, or the 2-point loss to Kentucky. I saw the tweet from Patrick Yom that said, it's crazy that Florida is a handful of plays from being 10-2 in the league, and they really are. But they're 8-4, and they are one Tennessee loss, I guess, from controlling their destiny to win the SEC championship. And that starts Wednesday night with Alabama, which I may have mentioned on the last show, doesn't guard anyone. What they do better than anyone in the country is score.
First of all, that knife cuts both ways. Like, the Gators were also in an overtime game with Georgia. They also had an LSU floater to tie a game and send it to overtime that was wide open. Also, so yeah, I don't know. I it's I am also, I'll say, guilty of that. You look,
Kentucky did not foul up three.
Yeah, you look at hindsight and you're like, and oftentimes that could be the case, but it's like there's also a world where the Gators have losses to Georgia maybe twice. You know, like it took a pretty big collapse from Georgia for the Gators to win by less than they should have. And LSU obviously was what it was. And so I don't know. It's like you could also see a situation where the Gators have two or three more losses on their schedule. And someone was pointing out this is also, again, I'm not sure. I know you were just led me into Alabama, but like the Gators did find themselves a quadrant one win on the weekend because Pittsburgh got up to 47 in the net. So which I did not expect to happen, truthfully. But that is a quadrant one win for the Gators. And it was just funny to me where someone on Gator Country. And again, I'm not trying to, I'm really happy for anyone who engages with the basketball team in any capacity. So I'm not trying to clown someone for being a casual college basketball fan, but someone on the Gator Country forums was like, how about that Michigan win? Is that quadrant one? Like I haven't been following this year. And I had to be like, oh no, that game was actually comfortably a quadrant three game, like not even close. And the Gators almost dropped that one. And it's like, so I don't know, you could, the Florida's resume that's also predicated on having no quad two, three or four losses could have also been upturned pretty easily when they were in an absolute dogfight with what turned out to be a horrible Michigan team. So I don't know. That's just my response to the, I do think the Gators have found themselves on the right side of a few bounces this year, relative to being on the other side of like, oh, I guess the Gators could have been a two-loss SEC team.
No, they are not top 100 in luck like Marquette or Purdue or I don't know. There's another top 10 team that is, but certainly like by Florida standards, being in the top 200 in luck this year, the KenPom luck metric is a vast improvement for a team that I think was 350th one season this decade. And Florida's definitely had some bounces go their way and some curious coaching decisions, John Calipari, go their way. So, it'll be interesting. They are playing a team that people keep asking me, like, do you expect Florida to get clobbered Wednesday? I mean, that's basically the question I'm getting. Hey, is Florida going to get run out of that building? And like, I guess it's possible, but my gut kind of says no. Like Alabama. Okay, so the thing about Alabama is that they score, that they're amazing on offense, and they're going to score 80 points on Florida, if not more than that, on Wednesday night. The other thing about Alabama is like their best win this season is Auburn. And so like they haven't beat anyone that I think is really great outside of their state. They beat Indiana State, who I think is pretty good, by 20 in Tuscaloosa. That was their second game of the season. So like their best wins are Indiana State, who's like a bubble-licious team that like might get in even if they don't win their conference tournament. And then Auburn. Clemson went to Tuscaloosa and won. Certainly Alabama, I think, has lost two home games in the last two or three years. They don't lose in Tuscaloosa very often, but because they don't guard anyone this year, it's a different type of Alabama team than it's been.
Yeah, like, I mean, they're kind of like the Gators, honestly, in that they are built to just, like, you look at their profile and it's like, yeah, they're very good offensively and they're not good defensively. They're a little bit of the ahead of the Gators in both of those metrics, being first in KenPom offense and 74th in defense. They've got a super talented point guard in Mark Sears, who, again, according to KenPom, is one of the best 10 players in the country. Mm-hmm. I don't personally know if I think he's like that good, but like, hey, he's shooting 45% from three while also getting to the rim whenever he wants. Offensively, he is pretty remarkable. They also, you know, they offensive rebound a ton, like Florida. They're not as good on the defensive glass, it's not like Florida hasn't been dominant on the defensive glass. Alabama's actually been bad on the defensive glass. But the one major difference is Alabama shoots and makes a bunch of threes and Florida does not shoot a lot of threes. Something we haven't really talked about. And again, like the Gators have, ultimately put up points. But something we haven't really talked about is that the Gators are like 252nd in the country in three-point rate, which again really defies what I think a lot of people would have expected from Todd Golden. So I think when you look at Alabama and Florida, as you mentioned, once again, like the Gators, do not have not shown the ability to beat a lot of good teams. I really see a lot of similarities between Alabama and Florida, except Alabama shoots a ton of threes. So you do see it's like when Alabama beats Texas A&M, they beat them by 25 and they put up 100. Whereas like Florida scores 88 and beats them by, you know, 8. I know they lost to Texas A&M, so it's not a good example. But you look at a lot of Florida's wins throughout the SEC schedule, and it's like, you know, Florida's putting up mid-80s, holding teams to mid-70s, and you know, they win by 8. Alabama yep. is like shoot a ton of threes and hang 100 on Texas A&M, hang 109 on LSU, hang 99 on Mississippi State, hang 109 on LSU, which is actually crazy. They've scored 109 on LSU twice. So, but then you also have they score 71 against Tennessee when their threes aren't falling. They lose to Auburn by 18 when their threes aren't falling. So they're like really when I look at Alabama, particularly relative to a Florida matchup, it's like these are two teams that play very similar, except Alabama has a whole lot of variance. So regarding whoever was asking you about just Florida get kind of boat raced or whatever, I forgot what term you used, wasn't boat raced. I honestly feel like the two outcomes of this game are Florida wins by 5 or Alabama wins by 18. Like that's kind of like the two outcomes. I don't really see a situation where Alabama wins a close game, and I don't really see the Gators blowing out Alabama, though it is possible. They've gotten blown out by Auburn and Tennessee. I think that it's like Florida shoots 15 to 20 threes, Alabama shoots closer to 30. How many Alabama hits is going to decide whether they hang 95 or 100 on the Gators and they win, or they score 80 and the Gators beat them 85 to 80. Like those are the outcomes I see, but I'm curious what your reaction to that would be.
So yeah, those are good thoughts. And I had not thought about it in as much detail as admittedly, as I think you just explained there. And now that you've explained that, that makes some sense. My point is I certainly expect Florida to be competitive in this game, because I think that they, like you said, they do. Florida is kind of a lot like Alabama. They're very similar basketball teams, actually. You know, right now, Mark Sears would be my vote for SEC Player of the Year. I think he's been the best player in the league, most complete player in the league. I love the Torvik points over replacement player stat. I think it's extraordinarily valuable. The only player in the country better in points over replacement is Zach Edey. The monster at Purdue is at 6'7". Mark Sears is at 6'3". By the way, Zion Pullen would be fourth in the country in that category. Only Terrence Shannon, who's accused of rape and playing, just need to get that out there. Zach Edey and Mark Sears are the only three players in the country higher than ZP right now. And I think it's a pretty spectacular metric. The number I like even more on Sears, which I think is just sort of a testament to just what a special year he's having on this collection of mid-major all-stars that Nate Oates has assembled, is he has an offensive rating of 130 and his usage is 26.6. So in the last 10 years of college basketball, only Marcus Howard has had a usage over 25 and an offensive rating over 125. So he's having basically the second season of any player in the sport in the last 10 years that is that efficient. Just to contrast this a little bit more, the closest SEC performance to Sears in the last, I went 15 years on this, Eric, and the closest to him from that standpoint are Scotty Wilbekin and Anthony Davis. All-American, All-Universe, Player of the Year, National Player of the Year. So Mark Sears is really, really good. What sometimes happens with Alabama is Grant Nelson gets absolutely abused inside. PJ Hall, for example. Somebody just really lights him up and is able to post him up. Alabama has to help a little more than Nate Oates wants, and other teams can get hot on the perimeter. Johnny Broom, they just let Grant Nelson and Muhammad Wagyu like try to deal with him one-on-one. Nate was like, whatever, I'm just not letting them shoot. And that was their only close game that they've had where they won, to Eric's point. They won. They beat Auburn by 4 at home. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, I hadn't really noticed what Eric pointed out, but they have blown people out. Jaron Stevenson is a dude who can shoot the ball and is kind of a special like point forwardy type player from Chapel Hill that they coaxed to Bama with NIL money and really good recruiting. And you know, the promise to play a little bit. He's another guy that they'll run out there, but none of those guys in their front court are particularly good or even average defenders. So what can happen is if Aaron Estrada and Rylan Griffin have nights where they don't quite shoot as well, then Alabama becomes super vulnerable because they can be over-reliant on Mark Sears. And I think his 30% usage rate reflects that a little bit. But Mark Sears is also so good that sometimes it doesn't matter, which is a point that, you know, Eric and I were talking about before the Georgia game. Like, sometimes Walter Clayton and Zion Pullen are so good that certain deficiencies in Florida don't matter as much.
Yeah, and I do think you kind of see with some of the role guys, like, they really do know exactly what they're out there to do. Like Latrell Wrightsell, it's like, yeah, he shoots 45% from three, and then they'll put Sam Walters out there, a freshman who's shooting 44% from three, and those guys just like don't even look at the rim. Like, in terms of like the ball gets like reversed to them, they are like, can I shoot it? No, then I'm like passing it up, and then I'm cutting through for space. So I do kind of like a little bit of that. Like, I wish they had centers that were more like like they don't have that rim running lob catching guy that has been so pivotal to what they've done in recent years. They don't have that guy. Instead, it's Grant Nelson, who I always thought was a weird pickup for them, as like, I think he's someone that like, because he's white, people think that he's a stretch big, and he's like never really shot like he's like a career 30% 3-point shooter on not a ton of volume. So he, and again, I don't think people realize that he was like a post-up guy at North Dakota State, not like a stretch guy. And so again, I think that the center position for them is not great. I would be interested if the Gators, and I don't think this is going to happen because, again, they've been reluctant to do so, but like, this would be an opportunity that I think, like an opportunity for the Gators to maybe go small. Like again, Jared Stevenson that they play at the four sometimes is 6'11" as a freshman, but it's not like they're not looking for him to be a big time offensive guy. And I just like, if I'm the Gators, I would welcome them trying to post up Jared Stevenson against a 6'4" Will Rich. Like I would go small and try to like goat them into like posting up Nick Pringle. So because anything you do that keeps them out of space and driving is huge. So going smaller and not having two guys that Alabama is going to look to hunt on every possession would be, I think, really wise. So, and I think that that's going to be everything that Alabama tries to do is like, how do we get Micah Hanlocked in or Tyree Samuel or Alex Condon or Thomas Houck on Mark Sears or Aaron Estrada? And how do we, you know, exploit those mismatches? So trying to get as few mismatches defensively on the floor as possible would be something I'd want to do, but maybe the Gators see it as like, hey, if we're going to win this game, we need to get 16 to 20 offensive rebounds and dominate there. Like, That'll be the situation. I think like I mentioned earlier, I do think that I would like Thomas Houck out there as probably the best. Well, both I think Florida's best help defender in the gaps in terms of stunting and helping on drives, as well as someone who in a one-on-one situation, if he does get switched on to a guard, could probably manage himself the best. So I do think this will be another big Thomas Houck game, but I'd also look for it to be a big. I mean, Will Richards out there, regardless, no matter the position, but would like to see him out there and at the four, and maybe get Riley Kugel out there, and then suddenly you've got, you know, four guys that are at least somewhat competitive on the perimeter, and then you try to stay out of mismatches that way. But I'll be really interested. It's the Gators have been reluctant to do that. But if ever a game, I think this would be the one.
Yeah, no, Alabama's going to, they're going to bomb away anyway. I'd help up your perimeter, chasing on the perimeter a little bit too. Alabama has attempted 768 three-pointers this season, Eric, per Hoops Lens. That is a lot, you know, that's the most in the SEC by a ton. They have connected on about 38% of those. They've also created, this is the staggering, like, Nate Oates basketball thing. They've created 655 shots at the rim. So if you take 768 threes and you have 655 shots at the rim, that leaves just 161 two-point jumpers. I mean, like, what they want to do, they are ruthless about doing it. And so, you know, yeah, maybe Florida goes smaller and says, like, we think R4 can rebound. It'll be okay, even if it's just for stretches. And then the other thing you have to do against them is you have to finish at the rim. But, you know, in six of their seven losses, teams have shot over 50% from the field on twos. Alabama has lost only once. One loss this season where a team has shot under 50% on twos. If they hold you to under 50 on your twos, they're going to beat you.
Yeah, that seems about it. And it's something that I do think is pretty admirable about Nate Oates. And I know we kind of laughed at him or laughed at it a little bit like three seasons ago when they really like had a very poor end to the season. And he kind of said like, hey, we're going to continue to play the style that I think we should be playing, even though I messed up and the personnel wasn't right. Like, he's just really so dedicated to his style of play. He's not someone who's going to change to the talent he gets, which again is on one hand is like can be detrimental, like we saw 3 years ago. I'd also say they haven't maximized Grant Nelson because of that. But at the same time, it's like, while you maybe don't maximize guys like Grant Nelson, you definitely maximize guys like Mark Sears and Aaron Estrada, and who are, you know, playing as good as anyone could have possibly imagined. So I can really respect the dedication to the style of play. And again, in a time of the transfer portal and building that way, it's like, and you look again, like, oh, who are the top players in, you know, the SEC and at some of these top teams in the country. And it's like, oh, Mark Sears, who was a multi-year eligibility transfer, coming from Ohio, now in his second year at Alabama. Now he's playing like one of the best players in the country. I think that shows why even Florida staff was looking at guys like Walter Clayton and Micah Hadlockton and Will Richard. It's like, those are really the guys that seem to be doing very, very well in terms of the like portal guys, these guys that have multiple years of eligibility that are now in their second year at high major stops. So maybe you'll look at what Walter Clayton could be next year. Walter Clayton is obviously already very good, much like Mark Sears was last year. But now Mark Sears is like in the All-American conversation. So, but yeah, this is a pretty huge game. I was looking at some of the modeling and it had the Gators with an 8% chance at winning the SEC, which is still crazy to me. But I think it kind of, you probably need this one against Alabama if that remote possibility is going to happen.
Hey, I said it would go way up if Florida won at Georgia, and it did. It doubled.
Yeah, it did.
4-8%. So, you know, certainly Florida's goals are all in front of them. But yeah, huge challenge on the road. I think in my like honest, you know, if you put me against a wall and said I had to choose, I would suspect that these two teams will split their games. I think Florida can beat Alabama. I just think they may need to do that in their home building with their home crowd. And this Alabama team in particular, because they're not terribly good defensively, has struggled more in road games as you'd expect. I expect they'll be quite ready for Florida this week. So, you know, huge challenge, but Florida should go up free and loose, as Todd Golden said. And obviously if the Gators do win, you know, I would imagine that the number on that SEC championship would skyrocket. Because their hardest road game would be out of the way. And, you know, they would then have three of their final five at home and one of the two road games left being a quad three game at Vanderbilt, which if you're playing a league road game in the SEC, that's still a quad three game. Like, the opponent is bad. So huge opportunity for Florida. We don't know yet if Florida will be ranked. Usually the poll drops around.
I thought it was going to, we're recording on Monday morning, and I thought it was going to update while we were recording, but it doesn't look like it.
I have been monitoring occasionally just to see, and I saw that the new women's poll has dropped, but not the new men's poll. So you'll have to wait a little bit. It'll be Eric Fawcett and someone after the Alabama games. I am away midweek. I will be back next week. I know you all are weeping to not have to hear my voice for an entire show. So I'll let Eric send us away.
Go Gators and keep attacking closeouts.